From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me on the show this week are Tom DeFrank, contributing editor to National Journal, and Stephen Collinson, senior reporter at CNN Politics. Here are the issues. The deal with Iran to curb its nuclear program got a critical reception on Capitol Hill from Republican members of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. One issue has drawn special attention: inspections of supposedly suspicious activities at Iranian nuclear or military sites. In Washington and Havana, embassies were open as diplomatic relations were restored between the United States and Cuba. And in the emerging 2016 presidential race, real estate tycoon Donald Trump has taken the lead, at least in one poll, among candidates for the Republican nomination. Well, probably the most entertaining story is Donald Trump, but we'll put that off for the moment and deal with the introduction in the Senate. Tom, I'll start with you, of the deal that the United States plus five other countries has put together with the Iranians regarding this nuclear treaty, although it's not technically a treaty. Republicans seem to be strongly critical. Democrats, while not strongly defending the treaty, seem to be on board with the president.
Well, I think that's right. I think the Democrats know that they're going to have to toe the line on a matter of a strategic global policy like this. But the Republicans were unrestrained. It's been a long time, Fred, where I've watched a congressional hearing where the lines were so strongly drawn in opposition. You couldn't find a Republican who had a nice thing to say about this treaty, including the chairman, Senator Bob Corker of Tennessee, who in the last couple of weeks have said, we're going to go through this very carefully and we're going to see what we have and it's going to have a thorough airing. And he sounded like the essence of a statesman. But at one point in the hearings, he basically, I think, put it in perspective. He was talking to Secretary of State John Kerry, and he said, you were fleeced. And there were words like, you've been had, bamboozled. Mm-hmm. It was very strong rhetoric. It wasn't a coincidence that some of the members, Republican members of the committee, were running for president. Mm-hmm. But still, there seemed to be two alternative universes here. You either are for this agreement or, in the case of the Republicans, adamantly against. Mm-hmm. Not just against, but adamantly against.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Stephen, it's not just these Republicans on the committee. I think it's pretty much the whole Republican Party, including its foreign policy experts and the people who served at the State Department and so on. It's pretty much across the board, I think, trying to find a Republican who has anything kind to say about this deal is like they're looking for a needle in a haystack.
Right. One of the only Republicans who's seemed open to considering this publicly is Jeff Flake, the senator from Arizona. Mm-hmm. He didn't look like he was too well disposed to the deal, if you can judge by his questioning. Tom was right. The lines were very starkly drawn. There was some strong language. I was a little bit surprised. I was actually expecting more histrionics and political mm-hmm. fireworks. It reminded me a little bit of that hearing back in the 2008 campaign when David Petraeus came back to testify on Capitol Hill about the surge, and Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton made a huge political deal about it. We had two presidential candidates in the hearing, Marco Rubio and Senator Rand Paul. And there wasn't the kind of explosive political grandstanding which perhaps some of us journalists were hoping to see. And I was actually quite impressed. A lot of the criticisms of the Republicans, as you say, many of whom appear to have made up their mind, were actually quite informed. It was quite a forensic Senate hearing. There was a lot of, I think, honest probing of this deal, even though I don't think anybody's position has changed. The question now is, can the president, you know, corral 34 votes in the Senate to stop the Senate overriding his veto, which will surely come if the Senate and the House disapprove of this deal. It looked to me like some senators who were perhaps on the fence, like Tim Kaine of Virginia, were signaling pretty clearly that they're not going to desert their president when mm-hmm. when it comes down to it. So my impression is, and there's a very intense lobbying campaign going on personally by the president, which is unusual, and by the rest of the White House, is that eventually this deal is not going to end up being knocked back by Congress.
Well, that would certainly be my view. Now, we've only had 2 days of hearings. One criticism was in the New York Times is, well, these guys, they just got this deal. How do they even know what's in it? Well, Come on now, we've, you know, there's been so much written and exposed about it in recent weeks and months, and if the senators have been following it as closely as many people who, in journalism, including myself, you know, they know a great deal about it, and that's why the sides are already fairly well drawn. But do you agree with Steve that it looks like there will be the votes to prevent, I think even in the Senate, where there could be a filibuster, would block a negative vote on the treaty from being passed?
It's hard to see how President Obama loses this one, especially since you need well over a so-called supermajority to defeat him. It would require a large number of Democrats to abandon the president. And while many Senate Democrats in the past have been very critical of President Obama for this or that, this is a matter of geopolitical urgency, and it's going to be very difficult for sufficient Democratic senators to abandon him. Some will, especially some that will be up for re-election, but it's hard to see. The president has a clear advantage on the numbers game here.
Mm-hmm. One of the things here, maybe this is just my own impression, but that is that John Kerry, the Secretary of State, was not a compelling witness. Maybe the Secretary of Energy was better, but anyway, Kerry was in charge. And one of the problems I think that happens is where Republicans will raise something that he said before, and he'll say, "Oh, that's got nothing to do with the hearings." He did it on the subject of dismantling the entire Iranian nuclear infrastructure. And that was something that was cited at the beginning. And even Kerry himself had said, was quoted in 2013 of saying that the whole idea was to dismantle, I'm quoting him, dismantle its nuclear program. Now he says, "Oh, we never talked about that."
Right. And there's a bunch of examples about inspections and other issues too. And, you know, that's the problem when the administration starts talking about things in the midst of a negotiation. You don't know what concessions you're going to have to give up. But I think what we're going to see now is the debate is going to move from, is this a good deal or is this a bad deal, onto, okay, if you knock back this deal, what then? And there really is no good alternative at this point. And that's one of the reasons I think Democrats are going to be compelled to support this.
I agree. Time now for a short break. We'll be right back with more Issues in the News.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
Welcome back to Issues in the News on VOA. I'm Fred Barnes with Stephen Collinson and Tom DeFrank. Where should we go on this? Well, I'll ask you the same question, but I'll give you another example, because there are many of them where John Kerry has said one thing in the past, and one of it was, we really have to get from the Iranians, because there's a UN resolution that says so, their past history of what they've done militarily and with nuclear weapons and so on. And more recently, Kerry has said, we know all that stuff. We don't need to force that point.
Well, it was really interesting that there's a new word in the White House lexicon referring to Iran, malign. Their malign tendencies. Well, and I think that's one of the things that the Republicans have jumped on, because, let's put it this way, the Iranians are not particularly trustworthy. Mm-hmm. They cheat. They do all sorts of things. And if they can figure out a way to circumvent this agreement, they will. But I also think Stephen is right. The whole essence is going to be, if this goes down the drain, the U.S. and the West have nothing to stop Iran except continuing the sanctions that are currently in place.
Which the Europeans, for instance, and the Chinese and Russians and so on, don't appear willing to do.
Exactly right. I think there's another subtext here that has nothing to do with diplomacy or whether this is a good deal or a bad deal. You have to remember that Kerry was testifying before the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, which he used to chair as a senator, and there's a lot of scar tissue there. A lot of Democrats, a lot of Republicans do not remember his tenure as committee chairman. warmly. So nobody was talking about that in the hearing, but that is part of it. And I think, you know, part of it is 2016 presidential politics. Mm-hmm. Part of it is there's no doubt a goodly number of Republican senators have sincere objections to this deal. They believe that it's too much. One of the things that I think we'll hear more about in the weeks ahead, Fred, is that a lot of Republicans think that at some point the Iranians figured out that President Obama wanted a deal too much, that he signaled here and there that he really was interested in this deal, and that maybe the Iranians got a little more than Republicans and some other hardliners feel was warranted. We'll see, but I think we're going to hear a lot more chatter about that.
One of the things that came up, and I've just got two other issues, and this is one of them to raise, Stephen, this idea of a 24-day period in which the Iranians, something suspicious that the inspectors think they found something suspicious at one of the undeclared sites, and it would take 24 days at a minimum to get that dealt with. A number of these experts, some Democrats, some Republicans, some neither, have raised doubts about that, whether or not that would allow the Iranians to hide anything that they were doing that would violate the deal.
Right. I guess to some extent it depends on what they would be doing. You know, if there's a flag raised that goes into this complicated arbitration process that's been set up to sort of talk about, you know, disputes under this deal.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something like infrastructure, building, materials, that might be something the Iranians could hide. If it's actually dealing with radioactive material, it's going to be very difficult for the Iranians to hide any trace of that, because that stuff hangs around forever, pretty much. So 24 days is just the blink of an eye in terms of that. So the proponents of that say, look, anything serious that Iran is doing, we're going to be able to find out about it anyway. But, you know, there's lots of these things that when the deal is now being talked over, that give plenty of ammunition for Republicans and other opponents of it to say, look, this is not airtight at all. But at the same time, this is the deal there is, and it's not going to change.
Tom, last question on this subject, and that is, here's what I think is the Republican strategy and their only hope, probably a far-fetched one, but I'll let you decide on that, of blocking this treaty. And that would be to generate enough questions about the deal in public, in the hearings and so on, to stir public opposition, and then pass a negative vote on the treaty and send it to the president amidst strong public opposition and dare him to veto it. I think it would be hard to veto it under those, admittedly, I think, remote situation.
I think that is remote. I mean, this is foreign policy, and this is arcane foreign policy, the minutia of rads and radiation and all this sort of stuff. I get a feeling that there is not a public groundswell out there. I'm sure.
I agree. There isn't.
I'm sure a majority of the American people don't think this is a good deal, but I don't think that's sufficient to change the political calculation and have citizens in the street with their pitchforks, you know, angry about this. I don't see that happening, because basically presidents are given a reasonable amount of latitude in the conduct of foreign policy. So I think you're right. It is remote.
Mm-hmm. All right. Cuba, the U.S., they've opened an embassy here in the United States for the first time in, what, a half a century anyway, going back to the Cuban Revolution with Fidel Castro and so on. What will diplomatic relations now restored do?
Right. That's a good question. It doesn't seem that there's been any particular change in the posture of the Cuban government towards dissidents, for example, since in the few months that this new policy has been underway. You know, you could also argue that this is not much time has elapsed for the situation to change.
Mm-hmm.
We saw the flags raised this week over the embassy of Cuba in the United States and of the United States embassy in Havana. There's no ambassador there yet. Republicans are vowing to block the appointment of an ambassador, among them Marco Rubio, the presidential candidate.
Yeah, but couldn't they? I mean, they can staff the embassy anyway, though.
It's just a symbolic step, basically. Yeah. We're going to see John Kerry go there next month to officially open the embassy.
Mm.
Most people in the foreign policy community in Washington now believe it's inevitable that President Obama will travel to Cuba before the end of his term. I would imagine it will come after next year's election, in the period before the new president is appointed, to sort of spare Hillary Clinton, if it is indeed her who's the Democratic nominee, the blowback from this. It's going to be interesting. The the real test of this is going to unfold over a number of years, and what happens when the Castro regime finally departs the scene, and whether there is, you know, a change in Cuba's behavior, and then we can decide whether the president had done the right thing. I think,
Fred, there is a parallel of sorts between the Cuban situation and the Iranian situation, as Stephen has observed. The Castro government has not become a bunch of freedom-loving Democrats allowing freedom of speech, religion, and the press. Dissident activity has been just as resolutely squelched since this agreement was reached than before. And some critics of the Cuban policy are saying this is what the Obama administration does. They give people the benefit of the doubt, but their policies don't change. We make these arrangements with, get all the benefits, you know, trade and tourism and all that sort of stuff. And in the Iranian case, relief from these substantial sanctions. But their behavior doesn't change, and that's why the Iranians are not going to change. Well, we will see.
Okay. Time for another break. We'll be right back with Issues in the News.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events not always covered by other media. VOA.
Welcome back. I'm Fred Barnes with Stephen Collinson and Tom DeFrank. And Steve, you've been covering Donald Trump, the real estate tycoon who's running for the Republican presidential nomination. And not only is he entertaining, he's already developed a lot of support among the right wing of the Republican Party for a number of reasons that we can speculate on. But it is a summer phenomenon. This guy Trump, he's commanding all the press attention, probably a lot of yours.
Right. I mean, it's fantastic stuff. It's hilarious watching this guy, slaughter sacred cows left, right, and center. I mean, he's absolutely shameless. You know, he's created this tornado of self-publicity around himself. I'm not sure that any of this has any relevance as to who's going to be the next president of the United States, but it's one of those great sort of episodes you sometimes get in presidential campaigns where there's a phenomenon, a candidate that explodes and then goes right up to the top of the polls, and then perhaps, you know, the storm will blow itself out. There are a couple of instances. Last weekend, Donald Trump questioned publicly whether John McCain, the senator from Arizona who spent 5 years in a prison of war camp in Vietnam, was actually a hero before sort of rowing back, and that caused a huge storm. The sort of Washington pundit class was basically considered his campaign dead after that.
Mm-hmm. Au contraire.
Yes. You know, the funny thing is, I talked to a lot of people in Iowa, New Hampshire, those early voting states, and no one approves of what he said. But I think it might be slightly less of an issue for the people that support Trump in the, as you said, the right wing of the conservative base of the mm-hmm. Republican Party. He's saying things about immigration they once said. Even people who aren't going to support him in the primaries and the caucuses, they're actually happy to have him there. They think it's great. It's kind of drives the debate. It's entertaining. Mm-hmm. So, you know, no one should read too much into these polls that say Donald Trump's leading the race, but I don't see any incentive for him to get out anytime soon.
I don't really either. You know, the thing about Trump that I think is appealing to a lot of people, particularly on the conservative side of the Republican Party, is he's not careful in his words. I think he says whatever pops into his mind. You know, there are a lot of these politicians in both parties where they're asked a question, and you can almost see the wheels turning in their mind, so they will come up with some safe or even evasive answer, but not Trump.
Evasive? You think politicians are evasive, Fred? I'm utterly shocked. Trump reminds me of another maverick politician from days gone by, Ross Perot, who at one point was leading the polls nationally, as I recall.
Now, yes. Donald Trump. This was 1992.
Yes, and there are some, especially around former President Bush, George H.W. Bush, who believe that Perot cost Bush re-election in 1992 by siphoning off votes. I believe it, too. Now, but I mean, what Trump is saying on immigration resonates very strongly with many of the activists who are going to control the primary process in the Republican primaries and caucuses next year. And He's got staying power. He's got money. He can self-fund if he needs to. He's a huge draw, a media attention. Mm. He can sell a lot of tickets for Republican fundraisers and whatever else he is. And I don't think he's presidential material. He is a compelling story.
Yep, no question.
And just when you think that he's going to calm down, he doesn't. I mean, he kind of is running against himself to be even more outrageous.
He's the master of the political stunt, no question about that. But here's the real problem for Republicans, I think, Steve, and that is Trump is sort of not exactly threatening to run as an independent candidate in the general election. In other words, it would be the Democratic nominee, presumably Hillary Clinton, and someone like Jeb Bush, and then Trump. And there was a poll, the Washington Post ABC polled on that question, and it showed that that Trump would kill the Republicans. It had Hillary Clinton at 46, Jeb Bush at 30, Trump at 20.
Right. That is why Republicans are going a little bit easy on him. They need to be careful about how they treat him. He's much better in the fold than out of the fold, as far as Republicans are concerned. The only problem with that is that we have the first Republican presidential debate coming up in about 2 weeks. Trump is going to be there. He's going to command the stage. It's going to be fascinating to see how he responds. Does he go up there and, you know, behave like Donald Trump, insulting all the other candidates to his face? Or does he perhaps dial it back a little and sort of act almost like the front runner in the race and a real political candidate? So it's going to be really fascinating. But, you know,
and also how others respond to him. I mean, for instance, is Rick Perry, the former governor of Texas, is going to repeat to Donald Trump's face that you're a cancer on conservatism?
It's just going to be absolutely fascinating. And, you know, all these candidates, they practice these debates with surrogates and everything else behind closed doors. I mean, who do you get to play Donald Trump? You know, you can't satirize this man. He does it himself. It's incredible.
Well, Trump was down in Texas, your home state, Tom, going, I mean, this was, I think, a stunt, going to the border and concluding that, well, we do have to build this wall that I think we ought to build to keep the Mexican immigrants out. I don't think he repeated his idea that if I were president, I'd make the government of Mexico pay for it, which, of course, they would not. But in any case, what do you make of these stunts?
Well, they have great curb appeal of reporters. There were probably more reporters on the border than there were Trump supporters on the border. I mean, I thought it was a wonderful little tableau when somebody asked the city manager of Laredo, Texas, which is right on the border with Mexico, what he thought about a wall. He said, well, he didn't think that was a good idea right now. Mm-hmm. Trump was just standing there pretending not to hear that. Yeah. So he is a showman. Mm-hmm. He is a showman. Mm-hmm. And he is entertaining copy. And it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in that early August debate with the Republicans, because they can't let everything go by that he has said, but they cannot trash him to the point that he has an opening.
Stephen, let me ask you all both very quickly, because I didn't mention an introduction, and that is the agreement of the government of Turkey to allow American planes, that a Turkish base, to attack ISIS. That seems to me to be a breakthrough.
Right. I think it's quite significant, because this base at Incirlik, I think, is about 60 miles or so from the Syrian border. That means that U.S. planes bombing ISIS are much closer to their targets. They don't have to fly from aircraft carriers in the Persian Gulf or bases in Iraq to get to these targets. So you can be a much more reactive, it's less expensive, you can have a much more sustained bombing campaign. So I think it's something the U.S. has been trying to get for a long time, and it's only recently that the Turks have seen the growing threat to their own territory from ISIS, cross-border attacks, terrorism, that they've actually agreed to go ahead with this.
Yeah, and of course, the Turks did not allow American troops to come through Turkey in the Iraq War in 2003 when it began.
That's right. The other thing about this, Fred, is that the U.S. Air Force has got a strong presence on the ground in Incirlik and has for 30 years or so. It's a bulwark of southern NATO defenses, and so the U.S. is already there, and that will make it easier.
That's all the time we have. Joining us today were Tom DeFrank, who you just heard, contributing editor to National Journal, and Stephen Collinson, senior reporter at CNN and expert on Donald Trump. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineer was Justin Thwaites. I'm Fred Barnes with the Weekly Standard. Thanks for listening.